Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." Hello, this is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. Blessings of Liberty is a ministry of the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, and we'd love for you to come visit with us if you are in the area. And maybe you do not have a church home, or maybe you're looking. We'd love for you to come and be with us at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's good to be in here today, and we appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate Noah and all the help that he gives with the radio ministry. And we want to say hello to him today. Appreciate what he does. And we're running just a minute late, so we would say we appreciate all of our listeners and those radio stations that we are on. But today we want to get right into the subject matter. And last week, in honor of Constitution Day, which Constitution Day is actually September the 17th, but we studied about President James Madison, who is known as the father of the Constitution. Well, today we're going to remain in that same time period. If you think about 200 years ago, what was going on in America was the War of 1812. Now, the War of 1812 lasted through 1814, so 200 years ago, our nation is at war. Sometimes the War of 1812 is called Mr. Madison's War. It's also called sometimes the Second American Revolution. But if you're a regular listener, you know that we're studying the subject of heroes of liberty, and we're taking a different individual each and every week, and we're studying some things about their lives and how that they are heroes of liberty. The hero I want to study about today is a gentleman you may have never heard of. His name is Dr. William Beanes. Dr. William Beanes, he was born in Prince George's County, Maryland, in 1749 to Scottish immigrants. Dr. Beanes had a Scottish accent his whole life. Now, when we meet Dr. Beanes in history, what we're going to be talking about today, he is a doctor, he's a farmer, he's a landowner. He owned more land than almost anybody in the county that he lived in, and he's a very well-respected citizen. The year is 1814, so we're going back exactly 200 years. At that time, Dr. Beanes is 65 years old. I've got a Bible verse I want to read. When I think of Dr. Beanes, I think about this, Proverbs chapter 16, verse number 31. The Bible says, "The hoary head is a crown of glory." Now, if you're not familiar with Bible language, what that means is a white-headed person. The hoary head. Maybe you've heard the phrase a hoar frost, H-O-A-R, and that's a white frost. So we're talking about a white-headed gentleman, a white-headed person. "The hoary head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness." Now, as we study history, it seems that some people are born destined to greatness. I think about the lives of maybe George Washington or Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee had a rich heritage of a great family. His father, Henry Lee, was a significant individual during this time period. And so you have some people, and it just seems they were born to be great. And there are other people who come along, and we might call them just incidental heroes. That sounds better than accidental hero, but just by incident, just by, you know, they just seem to be, they're in the right place at the right time. They do the right thing. One action leads to another, and the next thing you know, they've done something heroic, and they find themselves in the public spotlight. And this is what happened in the life of Dr. William Beanes. Now, when the British forces were on their way to attack Washington, D.C., they came through the county, and the town that Mr. William Beanes lived in. Most of the homes at that time had been deserted, but Dr. Beanes, he stayed in his home. And the British forces, they came by the house of Dr. Beanes. And Dr. Beanes was very hospitable to the British leaders there. He actually invited Admiral Cockburn and General Ross to spend the night at his house on August 22nd, 1814. Now, Dr. Beanes was an American, but he had a Scottish accent, you have to remember. And he was hospitable to these British officers that spent the night in his house. And when the officers left his house the next morning, they thought, you know, that fellow must be all right. I think he really is a friend to His Majesty's cause. And so they went away. They went on to Washington, D.C. They actually attacked Washington. They ran, James Madison and his wife Dolly, they had to flee Washington. And the British troops, they burnt the Capitol building to the ground. They burnt the White House to the ground. I mean, they just absolutely destroyed Washington, D.C. Well, 4 days later, the British, they retreat. They come back the same way that they came through. They're going back to their fleet. They've accomplished their goal. They've attacked and destroyed Washington. And so they come right back through where Dr. Beanes lives. Well, this time there were some stragglers. There were some British soldiers that were not up with the rest of them. And Dr. Beanes, he takes part in capturing and detaining 6 British soldiers and holds them as prisoners of war. Now, you've got to realize Dr. Beanes, and in that day and time, 65 years old, is probably more like 75, 85 years old. He's considered to be an old man. And here Dr. Beanes, he takes an opportunity and he captures or takes part in capturing these British soldiers. Well, there's a long story as to what happened in that situation, but the British came back to get their prisoners of war. They found out that some soldiers were missing. They came back. They found out that Dr. Beanes was involved in it, that they had these soldiers, and the British, they sent out word. They said, release the prisoners or we're going to burn the town to the ground. Well, they quickly decided that it wasn't worth that, and they released the 6 British soldiers back to their company. Well, what did they do about it? They captured Dr. Beanes and 2 of his friends. There were some friends that were staying there at his house, Dr. William Hill and Mr. Philip Weems. And as it come to find out, the 2 gentlemen, Hill and Weems, they didn't even have anything to do with the capturing of the British soldiers. And so after a while, they let Mr. Hill and Mr. Weems go free, but they kept Dr. William Beanes. They put him on a warship to be hauled off, and nobody knew where they were going to take him to. Nobody knew what they were going to try him for. But him having a Scottish accent, they thought, if they could prove or accuse him of not actually being born in America, but being a British citizen, they could try him for treason. They could put him to death over that. So everybody was worried about what's going to happen to dear old Dr. Beanes. And so this, you got to realize in your mind, this at that time, this is huge news. This is a principal person in the county that's been that's been taken off as a prisoner of war. And the British, they're merciless. And a lot of times they're killing people and they're burning towns to the ground and all of these things. So this is at that time, this is huge news. The newspaper of the time, the Baltimore Federal Gazette. Now, there were several newspapers, of course, at that time. But the Baltimore Federal Gazette wrote about the plight of Dr. Beans. And they reported in the story about how he'd been taken away, how he had captured some British soldiers, and then he had been captured himself and taken away, and he's an old man, and he's not in good health. When they captured him and took him to the ship, it really shook him up, didn't help his health any. He was well-loved. He's a respectable, valuable citizen in the community. And so this is big news. It is at this point in time that President James Madison gets involved, trying to work out a release of Dr. Beans. And James Madison, the president of the United States, begins to intervene on the behalf of Dr. Beans. He has special agents that all they do is try to work out and work on prisoner release, prisoner exchange. They were called the U.S. Agents for Prisoner Exchange. And Mr. John S. Skinner was sent by James Madison, President James Madison, to try to work out something so that Dr. Beans could get released. Now, some of Dr. Beans' friends also are worried about Dr. Bean, and they persuade another attorney friend to accompany Mr. Skinner. Now, this other attorney friend that went along with Mr. Skinner, some of you, maybe if you're real up on your history, you'll know who it was. This was a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer. He was also a very dedicated Christian gentleman. He was at one time considering and praying about going into the gospel ministry. But after prayer, meditating upon it, thinking about it, he decided that it was the Lord's will that he pursue being a lawyer. But Mr. Francis Scott Key was a great Christian gentleman. Now, Mr. Skinner and Mr. Key, Francis Scott Key, they are aboard a ship called the Minden. Now, all I'm doing today, I'm telling a long story about Dr. William Beans. But Francis Scott Key and Mr. Skinner, they hire a ship. It's called the Minden. And the Minden goes out on the river outside of Baltimore and heads up the river where the British fleet is docked. And they have a flag of truce. So they're allowed to go right up to the HMS Tonnant where Admiral Cochrane's ship is. And the Admiral, he receives Mr. Skinner, Mr. Scott Key on board. He's very cordial to them. You know, I can just imagine in my mind how it's going and everything. And so they finally, they tell why they're there and what they want. And when they tell why they're there and what they want, the Admiral grows very cold towards them. The Admiral was not interested in releasing Mr. Beans. And as you can imagine in your mind, now there's some things we just have to try to think about. You know, what would Mr. Beans have been thinking at that time? I mean, he's battered, he's bruised from being capturing and hauled off through the fields and across the wilderness, and he's in prison now on this warship with the British. And you know, as he's sitting there thinking about what's going on, I'm sure that it went through his mind, you know what, I've done more harm than good. Here I was trying to do something heroic or trying to help the cause, and now not only did I not help the cause, but the soldiers that I captured, they're free. And where I was free, now I'm in prison. So, Mr. Beans, what's going through his mind? We can only guess. And then he would think to himself, I think, my actions caused all this trouble to come upon us. And so, Mr. Skinner, Mr. Scott Key, they continue on trying to work for the release of Mr. Beans. Now, there was one General Ross. And General Ross was being the hard case about releasing Mr. Beans. He evidently took it very personal that he had spent the night in Mr. Beans' house, and Mr. Beans had been hospitable towards them. And then 4 days later, he turns and captures some British soldiers. And so General Ross did not want to let Dr. Beans go. And so he was being the hard case about it, this General Ross. Well, after some time, and Mr. Francis Scott Key, he played a key role here in the release of William Beans, because he had secured some letters from British soldiers that they had said that they were being treated well by the Americans. And so Mr. Scott Key, he used those letters, and finally they worked out that Dr. Beans would be released. Now, as fortune would have it, I guess that's a good word to use right there, now they're free to go. They go back to the Minden, but they're not allowed to return to Baltimore because the British have now decided to attack Baltimore and Fort McHenry. And so the Minden, the ship, Dr. William Beans, John Skinner, and Francis Scott Key will have to remain with the British fleet until after the battle. And after the battle, they said, "We'll let you go." So that was the arrangement for the release of Dr. Beans. Now, I think I've got time. I just want to tell a little side note about what happened to General Ross. Now, General Ross, and if you know anything about it was at that time called the Battle of Baltimore, and Baltimore was the third largest or most populated city in the whole United States. And it began with a land invasion. It was a two-pronged attack. They were going to attack by sea Fort McHenry, but about 10 miles away from Baltimore, they had let out their army troops, and that's how they had attacked Washington as well. They started by land. And so General Ross, he's over the invasion by the army, and then the Navy has their job to do at sea. So they unloaded their ships September 12th, about 10 miles out of Baltimore, so they began the land invasion of Baltimore. General Ross is leading the army. He's right in there with the troops. And they started about 3 a.m. on the morning of September the 12th. Well, along the way, they come across a farm called the Gorsuch Farm, and they stopped there and they had breakfast. They took a little break during their invasion. This is how the British operated. And so they stopped for breakfast. And, of course, they just, you know, they don't have, they're just invading. They're an invading army is what they are. And so they just take advantage of whoever's farm it is. You know, here we are, feed us. And that's what they do. Well, they're at this farm. It's called the Gorsuch Farm. And the owner there, as General Ross was having breakfast, he asked him if he would be returning that evening for supper. And General Ross made the reply. He said, No, I'll eat in Baltimore tonight or in hell. That's what he said. I'll eat in Baltimore tonight or in hell. Well, it was just a few minutes after that, and unknown to General Ross and the British Army, the militia had about 3,000 people that they'd sent out to protect Baltimore, and they begin to attack the British Army. And so General Ross, he runs outside, he begins to see what's happening, and it's more than just a few militia members. And General Ross runs outside, he gets on his horse, and he's riding down the road, and a single shot fired from the woods, and nobody knows where the shot came from, went through his arm, went into his chest, and within just a very few minutes, General Ross died. As I was reading about that, I thought about what the Bible says in Proverbs 16 in verse number 18. I was thinking about his boasting of eating in Baltimore. He said, well, he never ate in Baltimore. But the Bible said in Proverbs 16 and 18, it said, pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. And that was big news as well. And that's one of the things that really turned the tide in the battle, is General Ross was very, very important to the army, and it sort of upset the plans for the whole day. There was a newspaper writer, his name was Hezekiah Niles, and he wrote at that time he wanted there to be a monument where General Ross was shot and killed. And he had suggested that the following inscription be on the monument. And he said, by the just disposition of the Almighty, near this spot was slain September 12, 1814, the leader of a host of barbarians who destroyed the capital of the United States. That's talking about their attack upon Washington. And devoted the populous city of Baltimore to rape, robbery, and conflagration. And so they didn't think much of their British attackers at that time. Well, General Ross, he's the one that did not want to let William Beanes go free. Well, we come back to our three patriots. They're on the ship Minden, and they're watching helplessly the next day, September the 13th, as the British fleet bombs Fort McHenry all day and all through the night. And it's amazing when you learn about the history of what exactly happened. The British had cannons that could shoot 4,000 feet. Well, the Americans in Fort McHenry, their cannons that they had only had a range of about 2,000 feet. So what it basically boiled down to was just an all-out attack, a bombardment by the British fleet. That, you remember, they're out in the river there. They're attacking Fort McHenry. They're attacking Baltimore. They are supposed to have an army coming in. I believe it was from the north that they had led off the previous day. So they're trying to attack Baltimore. And one of the things that they desired the most was the mental impact it would have upon the Americans, and then the commercial riches that they would gain from it. Because Baltimore was a trading port, and there was gunboats that went in and out of Baltimore all the time. And so they said, boy, if we can defeat Baltimore, it'll be an attack to the juggler of the American army and the Navy. And so they really wanted to attack Baltimore. And so they just bombed Baltimore all day long on September the 13th. And then all up until the night, way up until the night. And Francis Scott Key, Dr. William Beanes, and Mr. Skinner, they were on the Minden ship, and they were out of harm's way. They were actually about 8 miles away on the river. And the only thing that they could see, Francis Scott Key, he had one of these little one-eyed telescopes. Maybe you've seen in movies that pirates have, you know, and they'll unfold them a little bit. And so he would look at Fort McHenry, and you're on a ship, and you're trying to see 8 miles into the distance. And they were trying to just discern. They didn't know during all this time. You know, there'd be bombing, and then there'd be quiet. And then during the night, there'd be bombing. And then there was a long period of quietness. And then the bombs started up again. They started attacking again. And what they were doing during that second attack, they were trying to mask about 3,000 British soldiers were trying to come in by the sea. And they were trying to get onto the land. So all these things are going on in Francis Scott Key and all night long. And here's the interesting thing about Dr. William Beanes. It is said about him that all through that day on September the 13th and all through that night that Dr. William Beanes was beside himself, and that he kept asking over and over, can you see the flag? Is the flag still there? And so that was the question that he kept asking. And I can just see him there, and they're trying to watch, and they're watching from this ship, this great naval battle attack going on. And Mr. Beanes, walking back and forth and wringing his hands, "Can you see the flag? Is the flag still there?" Well, early the next morning, they got the answer. Was the flag still there? And we know, of course, the answer to that question, was the flag still there? And it was. Now, here's something that you don't hear all the time. Fort McHenry actually had two flags. They had a storm flag, a smaller flag, but they had a larger flag. They had a flag that was especially requested to be made by Commander Armistead. They had an American flag that was 30 feet tall and 42 feet wide. And Commander Armistead, he's the commander of Fort McHenry, and he had especially requested that a flag be made large enough so that the British couldn't miss it. He knew that at some time during the war they would be attacked, so he had this huge flag made. And sometime during the night, the Americans in Fort McHenry, they took down the storm flag and they raised up the giant flag, the Star-Spangled Banner. And that, on the dawn of the morning of September 14th, is the flag that Francis Scott Key and Dr. William Beanes and Mr. Skinner, that they would have seen, that huge flag. Don't you know that was a pretty sight on that morning of September the 14th? And I can hear Dr. Beanes in the background. He's the old gentleman, and a lot of this is sort of his fault. You know, you don't learn that without digging into it a little bit. There's some other circumstances we don't have time to go into, but I can hear him that next morning. Is the flag still there? And they learned that the flag was still there, and Mr. Francis Scott Key was inspired to write a poem. The poem was originally entitled The Defense of Fort McHenry. And the first stanza is in the form of a question. It says, "Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight or the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-bangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" And the last stanza is in the form of an exclamation point. And it says, "And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave." That was 200 years ago this week. Dr. Beanes just did what he could, where he could, when he could, and he left the details unto the Lord. May we do what we can where we are. Thanks for listening today. Have a good day, and God bless you is our prayer.
This has been Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wynn Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, our church phone number is 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.